Chapter 17.
This will be a difficult matter for me to square with others, but I would be prepared to offer Admiral Neothel's fleet safe haven. At a time like this, when Colonel Solo clearly represents the greatest threat to Fondor and the rest of the galaxy, uniting against him is the most important thing. He may well be back to finish the job he started, and if he doesn't, then I would like to commit the forces we have left to finishing him.
Shas Vada, President of Fondor, to Luke Skywalker. Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin.
Mandalore, we've got company.
Fett paused to adjust the audio in his helmet comlink with an eye blink. Blaster fire spat around the compartment, cracking the air apart.
"Can you deal with it, Orade?"
The Trakhod was the right vessel at the right time. Even without manual systems, it was ideal for playing dead.
"Med Sprinter docking top rescue hatch."
"How caring."
Fett was getting tired of waiting for the Moffs and the platoon of shock troopers defending the next compartment to give up and die.
"Clear!"
He lobbed in a small stun grenade.
"No debts. Keep the place in one piece if we can,"
and instinctively flinched at the stupefying blaze of light and noise, even though his helmet buffered it. Then he hosed the space with blaster fire.
"Courageous medic, or some scumbag abusing the non-combatant flag?"
"They'd better be medics, or they might end up in need of surgery themselves. Leave it to me and Rom."
Myrta backed along the bulkhead, blaster raised, and stepped past Fett to check the compartment. The ship's defended heart was like a nest of boxes. That was great, as long as you weren't trying to get out. Somewhere aft of them they could feel sporadic thumps through the ship as troopers tried to smash their way into the center section.
"Did you fry the locks on the hatches to the hangar deck?"
Fett asked.
"Yes."
Myrta listened at the next barricaded hatch to the Moff's last stand.
"I hate being interrupted when I'm working. We can crack it later if they still want to fight."
Carrot and Vevut unrolled a strip of detonite to make a frame charge.
"You reckon they'll cave in when we de-moff this crate?"
"Maybe."
Fett calculated for a moment. 20 Mondos in Bloodfin, about 30 standing by to follow them and take the troopers trying to batter their way into the engineering area. The Imperials might have had a lot more troops, but that counted for little in a confined space where they couldn't actually use them.
"They're log-jammed."
Carrot and Vevut waved him back, and he took cover with Myrta. The whoomp of the exploding charge left the hatch hanging open. Vevut ripped it to one side with a crush-gaunted hand, and fire spat out the hatchway. If Dalla hadn't wanted the ship largely intact, this could have been over by now. A volley of bolts struck Carrot in his Beskar chestplate and smacked him against the bulkhead. He made an animal grunt of annoyance.
"Ah, I love it when you boys get saucy," he wheezed.
Fett heard the shunk of his gauntlet vibroblade.
"Come here and say hello to your Uncle Carrot."
Carrot dived into the opening with Vevut and Fett behind. It was an adrenaline-fueled blur, as it always was, and Fett was aware of Vevut getting a face full of white armor. The troopers must have shoved the remaining Moffs into the next compartment to shield them. The spaces were so cramped now that it was hand-to-hand fighting, with not even enough space to raise a rifle. Displays and sensor panels crashed across consoles like barriers. He tasted singed plastoid when he inhaled. He needed to smell his environment, helmet filters or not, and he would have been blinded by smoke if the HUD hadn't picked up other wavelengths. He jumped onto a collapsed panel to vault over it, and it split beneath his boots, catapulting him forward onto a shock trooper. The man shoved his sidearm into Fett's belly and fired. The impact of rapidly expanding superheated air was like a gut punch, but Beskar really was worth the extra weight. Fett smacked down hard with his vibroblade into the gap between chest plate and underarm, feeling it lodge and then penetrate. A blaster bolt that wasn't his cracked into the man's helmet in a blinding flash of light. The trooper stopped struggling.
"Babuir," said Myrta, trying to haul him up. "Where's the Jedi?"
Jaina Solo was tough enough to look after herself. But if she'd managed to get herself killed, he'd be furious. That wasn't in the plan. He scrambled to his feet, then heard a thud and turned. Jaina dropped down out of what looked like a ventilation duct.
"Tahiri," she said. "She's gone into the shafts. Schematic says that's an emergency exit route. Last resort."
"You busy, Mandalore?"
Carid yelled. He seemed to forget that he didn't need to raise his voice in a helmet. He usually preferred fighting without one.
"Or we'll just mop up this bunch on our own, shall we?"
"On my way," Fett said. "Solo, can you get her?"
"I need her blocked off somewhere along the route."
"I'll do it." Myrta adjusted her helmet. "I'm small enough to pass through in armor."
"There's a med sprinter docked topside," Fett said. "Just a hunch. But do those ducts join up?"
Myrta checked her datapad.
"Yeah. There's a space a little under 2 meters high, running the underside of that hatch. I reckon Tahiri calmed a ride home. Maybe you should use the flamethrower."
"Let's not," said Jaina, looking up at the deckhead.
She shut her eyes as if listening, and coughed.
"Fearfek. Next time I'll make her wear an environment suit. I can feel her, but I can't feel anyone outside on the hull."
"You can sense that?"
"When I really concentrate."
She took a deep breath and coughed again.
"Might be a med droid. Might be someone who can vanish in the Force. And I can guess who that'll be."
"I didn't need the Force to know your brother would come to collect his villip,"
said Myrta, and dragged a seat across the deck to climb up to another ventilation grill.
"And if I get to him first, your training's going to be wasted."
"I said, we leave the scumbag to her."
Fett lunged to grab Myrta's ankle just as she hauled herself into the trunking. He couldn't think of anything that would express his sudden fear for her. He tried.
"Don't get killed now that I've bought your wedding present."
She shook her leg free.
"Get a refund."
Jaina gave him a sympathetic shrug and bent her knees, bouncing a little as if she was going to jump. She did. She vanished up the shaft, and there was no sound of her crashing into anything.
"Yeah, clever."
The noise of close-quarters fighting had now given way to more distant sound transmitted through the ship's decks, the faint vibration of some serious pounding taking place. The blast-proof bulkheads and hatches in the engineering sections seemed trooper-proof, too. Fett turned to see Carid's head stuck out of the hatch.
"Don't get all envious. You can do that with a jetpack. Now, Mandalore, we're about to open your surprise. So if you wouldn't mind hauling your shebs in here..."
"I shouldn't have brought her. Or Orade."
"Don't go soft on me, Fett.
I need someone to dance on my grave."
Carid was a good man, but Fett missed Bevin on ops like this.
"How many have we got in there?"
Fett picked his way through the debris to another hatch, one with double doors. The schematic said this was the inner sanctum. His terahertz penetrating radar showed bodies moving around. Just a dozen or so now. As far as he was concerned, it was a stupid design for a warship. But then he didn't fight the way Imperial navies did.
I reckon they'd have a good 20 to 30 moffs and their lackeys in a flagship,
Vivut said.
I count 14 dead so far.
Well, they don't look like they're leading their troops from the front. Let's drill out the rest of the maggots.
Vevut and Fett crouched in the cover of a console ripped from the deck, squatting ready to spring forward as soon as Carid blew the hatch bolts. Fett felt no pain. He knew he'd feel like a wreck tomorrow, but right then he was immune, buoyed up on urgency, adrenaline, and long practice. His body knew what needed doing, even if his brain kept trying to tell it that he was too old for this nonsense, and that he needed to worry about his granddaughter.
You didn't give a mot's backside about her mother for decades, and now you worry about the kid.
There was no logic to the things that went through your head when you thought you might die, and every time he drew a blaster, a little voice said that this might be the last time he did, even if he never believed it.
Cover!
Yelled Carid.
Volume,
Fett sighed, ears ringing. Whoomp! The hatch doors ripped apart. Fett's stream of blaster fire preceded him as he jumped over Carid and burst through the hatch. They were fresh out of troopers inside, and he didn't care if he was dealing with armed moffs or not, because his hand didn't have time to factor that in before it carried on firing. He waited for the noise to stop. Blaster, exploding transparaplast light fittings, shouts, cries of pain. He'd heard folks say that Mondos were totally silent when they attacked, but then they never heard what went on inside the helmets. Carid had his vivid stream of invective running the whole time, and he never seemed to use the same profanity twice. Vevut muttered to himself. When they got hit, they yelped. Fett couldn't recall making any sound apart from what was forced out of him by being winded by a blow or a fall.
"Well, Endex for them,"
said Carid. He aimed his blaster while he checked for any still alive. 5 men. Maybe there were other officers, but not here. They'd reached the core of the Citadel. Fett looked up.
"No. I didn't think they'd be that dumb."
There was a decent-sized hatch above his head. Nothing so small as to need an undignified scramble to pass through. A panel of controls was inset into the deckhead next to it. Fett lifted his arm to poke the panel with the muzzle of his blaster, and it ratcheted open, releasing a ladder that extended to the deck and came to rest on 2 feet.
"They don't go down with their ship, then."
He directed his penetrating radar by tilting his head, and his HUD showed that the shaft rose vertically, then branched off at 45 degrees. If the schematic was right, the angled shaft would come out in a larger passage just under the emergency hatch. Sounds of twanging metal said that the shaft was either buckling with heat from a fire, or someone was hitting it. Boots on rungs, probably.
"Why do people always run away from us?" Carid said.
"Let's go ask them," said Fett.
Imperial Destroyer Bloodfin, Emergency Route Beta 1. The Star Destroyer was riddled with shafts that reminded Jaina of sinuses in a skull. She emerged at the top level, sweating. It had to be the top. She ran along the passage at a crouch, looking to either side, and couldn't see any more openings. She didn't have a sense of any concealed hatches either. But if Jason was there, he'd know she was too, even if he couldn't pinpoint her exact location.
"Myrta. Where's Myrta?"
Ben had once said to her that he used the GAG helmet comlinks because the Force was all well and good, but he needed to send and receive complex information in apparent silence, and the Force was pretty poor at that. Jaina wished for a helmet, just for a moment, to communicate with Myrta. In the end, she didn't need to. She found her squatting with her blaster leveled ahead. Jaina dropped down, too. Myrta's hand signals were actually very clear. 3 or 4 contacts ahead. Then she drew a T-sign in the air with her fingertip, Tahiri, and shrugged.
"She's in there,"
Jaina breathed. It was as quiet as she could make it.
"I feel her."
The schematic didn't show everything, apparently. Myrta lifted her left forearm, blaster held one-handed in her right just like her grandfather, so Jaina could read the datapad housed in it. Jaina could see a hatch in the deck of the passage that wasn't shown. They bolted past it at a crouch, peeling the soles of their boots from the surface to avoid noise, and then they came to a corner. There was a slow, rhythmic scraping sound, like someone unscrewing a metal container. What happened next felt completely natural. Myrta pointed to the front and side, then to Jaina, and then to herself, and indicated forward. She'd give Jaina covering fire as she rounded the corner.
"Hey, I'm getting used to these people,"
Myrta signaled.
1, 2, go.
Jaina shot around the corner, and even though she was in Myrta's arc of fire, she felt complete confidence. But ahead of them, Tahiri, struggling to release something in the deckhead, clinging to a ladder, wearing a bright yellow environment suit, clearly didn't. She let loose with a volley of blaster bolts that Jaina deflected with her lightsaber. The fire hit Myrta's plates. Jaina had never been close enough to someone in those circumstances to worry about what happened to deflected bolts. But now she knew. Myrta swore loudly and returned fire. Tahiri fended off the shots with her own lightsaber, and then Myrta just went crazy as far as Jaina was concerned. She ran full tilt at Tahiri, yelling some curse at her at the top of her voice. Something like,
"Gar Shabika!"
Myrta shouldn't have been able to beat a Jedi's reaction time, but she did. She cannoned into Tahiri, and the impact lifted the Jedi bodily. It had to be the pure shock of seeing this ball of armored, cursing fury coming at her, not caring if the enemy held blaster, lightsaber, or ion cannon that rooted Tahiri just long enough to get hit hard. She lashed out with the lightsaber. Jaina could see Tahiri through the faceplate and knew she would never forget her look of horror as the blade of energy simply failed to slice through Myrta's body.
"My lightsaber doesn't work."
For any Jedi, it was a shocking, naked moment. Jaina was only a split second behind Myrta, but it felt like minutes. She found herself on autopilot, somehow accessing that blind violence that Bevine had shown her, that absolute focus. And for a moment, for long enough, it shut down every warning about the dark side. There was no anger, only her body taking over, and a voice inside saying,
"You can't kill Myrta. She's getting married. Her mom died. She's found her grandma."
It felt like perfect logic right then. Jaina swung at Tahiri like a madwoman. Myrta rolled clear, and there was the shunk of a vibroblade. She ducked under the flashing lightsabers, taking a fair few accidental hits, and Jaina saw it unfold in that odd slow motion of desperate combat. Myrta's blade connected with Tahiri's leg and dug into her thigh. Blood spurted. She'd hit an artery. Her blaster went spinning across the deck. And then there was firing from behind, and boots running. Tahiri fell back, clutching at her leg. Jaina twisted to see what was coming her way, and there it was. 3, 4 men in brownish-gray uniforms and caps running toward them. One turned to fire behind him and got a bolt in the chest for his trouble.
The rest opened fire on Jaina and Myrta, and it was clear they wanted to get where Tahiri was going. Tahiri herself was second priority at that moment. Jaina slashed at the flying bolts. Fett, Carid, and Vevut came pounding up behind the Moffs, and the firefight sent Jaina spinning on instinct alone, following her lightsaber. She felt the breath of cold air behind her. Metal rasped. Tahiri had dislodged whatever had jammed the hatch, and when Jaina turned, she saw Tahiri scrambling through the deckhead. There was blood everywhere on the deck. Myrta was on her knees, clutching her throat one-handed.
"Your Shabla brother!" she gasped. "He's up there!"
The Moffs lay dead. Jaina felt Jason then. He was throttling Myrta to let Tahiri escape into the docking tube above the hatch. Jaina put every scrap of strength she had into breaking Jason's invisible force chokehold on Myrta. She saw it like a black chain and visualized the links flying apart just as Carid shot past her and scrambled up the ladder, followed by Vevut. Fett skidded to a halt and grabbed Myrta by her shoulder, as if he thought the blood on the deck might be hers.
"I'm okay," she said.
"If he's hurt you, I'll break my own rule and take a long time killing him," Fett said.
"Don't worry," Myrta rubbed her neck. "I got my own Jedi."
Then the hatch above them slammed shut. Fett took a couple of steps up the ladder and hammered on it.
"Let me up there."
He hammered again. It must have been the airlock. They could hear nothing.
"Carid, open the hatch. Now! Leave the scum. You too, Vevut."
But there was still silence. And then Jaina could feel scraping vibrating through the hull. Med Sprinter, Belly Hatch Docking Tube.
Tahiri.
Kytus could see her in the dark tunnel of the tube, through the transparasteel viewport set in the outer hatch. The tube was 5 or 6 meters deep, long enough to extend through the multi-skinned hull and into the airlock beneath. He opened the hatch. It was a simple manual opening, the kind that flipped back on itself.
"Tahiri, come on!"
"I'm stuck," she said weakly.
"You've only got a few meters to go."
"Jaina." He could feel Jaina very close.
"Come on."
I'm bleeding. I'm trying to hold it together."
"Where?"
"Thigh. The blood's just pumping out. My suit's caught."
"Femoral artery."
She'd be dead in a couple of minutes. He could force lift her.
"Here's a trick we can learn you, son," a voice below snarled. "Breathe vacuum. We can. We're well-armed. It goes like this."
There were Mandalorians below Tahiri, in the tube. A power tool began whining, and Kytus smelled metal being ground. Air rushed past him, whipping small scraps of flimsy down the tube.
"They're cutting open the docking tube."
"I've caught my suit."
Kytus could see Tahiri now, the blood-soaked leg of her environment suit bunched up in one fist, maybe to seal the cut, maybe in some futile attempt to stop the hemorrhage.
"My suit's caught on something sharp."
Tahiri didn't scream, but Kytus felt her terror and heard little gulping sounds as she struggled to release her suit from whatever had snagged it. She was ripping it as she pulled.
"I could stop the bleeding. I could seal the breach. I could pull her clear."
He could force push their attackers, or grab her to free her, or snatch the cutters, but that would just open the rip in the docking tube, too. He couldn't do it all. He was still exhausted from the effort of the battle link and bringing down Fondor's defenses.
"No, I am not omnipotent."
and he could pull up into the body of the med sprinter to save himself and leave her to die. But he needed Tahiri.
"Don't you dare die on me."
Kitus slipped into the tube, catching onto the handholds.
"Grab me when I'm in reach and hang on."
He'd force jump when he had hold of her and pull free of the docking ring. It was fine. He could do that. And then something above made the med sprinter shudder. The tube creaked and strained at his end. The hatch slammed shut overhead. He was shut in a docking tube that was venting atmosphere, with a dying woman beneath and some psychotic Mandalorians bent on suicide.
"They've got vacuum-proof suits," Tahiri said.
It had never crossed Kitus's mind to wonder how Mandalorian armor and their undersuits worked. It was obvious. They were like trooper suits. The battered and archaic appearance masked the best technology that could be built into armor.
"If I push hard, I can open that hatch again."
The air wasn't venting as fast as he'd feared. The men below were using some kind of powered saw on the tough material, and the aperture they'd managed to create was small compared with the volume of air rushing to escape. Kitus dropped down into the tunnel, and something grabbed his leg. He thought it was Tahiri, but it was a gauntleted hand, and it hurt. It was crushing his ankle. Someone grabbed him around the waist, too, but that was Tahiri, he hoped. His ankle twisted. That was not Tahiri.
"Hi there, Jason. I feel like I know you already, you Hutun."
There were only so many competing elements that even a Sith Lord could handle at once. Kitus had to choose, and fast.